Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the Internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth. The rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking, and welcome to the second episode of Born in the 1940s, We Remember. And for those of you with an astute eye, I have a new school picture up on site today. And if you think you can find my co-host, Jim Fetzer, let me know which one of those kids you think is Jim. Because unlike most of the media out there, Jim and I, A, have nothing to hide and absolutely no reason to lie. We've been around, we're as old as dirt, and we remember a different America. We remember a different world. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Maria. And the world is getting worse and worse and worse, and I'm just shocked by these abuses of police, of children in schools. It's unbelievable, Maria. I am shocked and horrified. Nothing could be more different than the America in which you and I grew up.
I know. I totally agree. I can't believe it. And, you know, you and I were discussing this young woman that just got trashed by a school, I don't know, fake cop, whatever you want to call them. And, you know, you never would have seen that when we were kids, okay? Teachers used to know how to control the children. First of all, the girl wasn't doing anything wrong. She's just sitting there. And I guess they wanted her out of the room for chewing gum or whatnot. But even the kid that filmed it ended up getting arrested, being held on bail. What kind of country is this? And everybody else in the classroom terrorized to even defend the little girl because they might end up with a bullet.
This cop looks like he's about 6 foot or more, weighs maybe 300 pounds. She was like 5'2". He was throwing her around like a piece of luggage, Maria.
I know.
I mean, it's completely disgusting. I don't think I've seen anything that's got me so enraged.
I told you before the show.
And the classmate who filmed it is being arrested and fined for taking a picture of the offensive behavior of the cop. What has happened to this?
All right. Well, it's supposedly legal to be able to film cops. But listen, we were talking before the show, Jim. You and I, we grew up as far different lifestyles as two young Americans could possibly grow up with. And I know on our last show, we really went into depth about you, your background, your life, and people loved the show. And I think it's important for people to know who are they listening to. And I think that's partially why I wanted to do, you know, the last show we did and this show, so people have a handle on who we are, because I'm tired of people accusing us or imagining who they're listening to, especially when we get accused of being, you know, insiders, Zionists, this, that, bing, bang, zoom. But, you know, in my day, you know, my earliest recollections were, and I know you know because you're a student of history, you know, having been born into an Italian family, you know, I'm only second generation American. Having been born into an Italian American family in what I considered a ghetto, a slum, okay, because it was the only place Italians could live in those years. And knowing why the mafia was brought to the United States, it was brought to protect us from the police in this country, from shaking us down and abusing us. You know, back in the day, the mafia, as we used to refer to it as the Mothers and Fathers Italian Association, actually had more class and more protection than the police offered to American Italian Americans. So to us, the police were always the enemy. So when I look at the police state today, I look at it from a little bit different point of view than you, because to me, they were always the enemy. You know, by the time I was 16, 17, I knew how much money you had to have in your wallet to pay off a cop if you got stopped. You know, you had to have a crisp $100 bill right next to your driver's license in your wallet. It was an unsaid rule. You know, I watched some of my friends get arrested on bullshit charges as teenagers do and leave the precinct beaten, brutally beaten. And the cops were, their excuse was always the same. He fell down a flight of steps. You know, if I didn't live the life I did, I don't think that I could see the world the way that I do. But I am certainly not lying when I tell you that I have paid off judges to get my friends out of court before their rap sheet caught up with them. And every judge had a different price, and the bail bondsman told you how much the judge wanted. That was normal, and we're looking at late 1960s Brooklyn, New York.
This is astounding. And you know, the attitude then about the cops may be one we have to readopt all over, because they're not there to protect and serve when you have abuses like this.
Of course not. And I mean, any Italian doing business was getting shakedown. I mean, it was a shakedown. You had to pay off the cops. You know, you see it in movies now. If you watch Boardwalk Empire, you see how the bootleggers had to pay off the cops. That was a normal part of doing business. This is how I grew up. So to me, the cops were the enemy. If you were having a gang war in my neighborhood, which happened regularly, okay, this was my childhood. I didn't grow up like Shirley Temple. I would look out the window or be sitting on the stoop when all of a sudden, you know, the big clash in New York were the Puerto Ricans against the Italians. And they could be having the biggest rumble you've ever seen with knives and everything on the street. But as soon as somebody said the cops are coming, everybody ran away. Okay? So even to the biggest gangs in New York, the cops were an enemy. Do you know what I mean? I remember once literally having to scrape up. And remember, it's 1967, Jim. This is a lot of money. $300 to pay off a judge before my boyfriend's rap sheet got in front of the judge. After the judge got the $300, he looked at my boyfriend and said, his attorney lied and said, this man has never had a charge in his life. And the judge just approved it and he was out the door. Okay. I was happy, of course.
Good work with a corrupt system, Maria.
Right, so think about it. I look at it and I say, okay, I knew and witnessed how corrupt it was in 1960s. Look at where it's come from that, where now you can buy the office of the President of the United States. Okay? And you look at the police brutality where the cops are unleashed. They're like wild animals today. And, you know, in a way, people that say, oh, we're so happy that, you know, the mafia is gone or whatever, people will be begging for those days to come back because there's nobody to protect us anymore. And that's the beginning of my happy little childhood.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
You know, I mean, it just so happened, you know, I don't know if I fell in with the right crowd or the wrong crowd in my teenage years. I guess I had too many nice, normal friends. And as soon as I got introduced to people that were outside the law, that's when my life got really exciting. And I have to tell you, Jim, I had more respect for these mafia chieftains that I got to meet, and I got to meet plenty of them, from Colombo to Genovese. They actually were nicer people than any politician you'd ever meet. And they used to have a couple of really good jokes. One, they said, you know, the only difference between us and government agents is that they have a license to kill and we dress better than them. I mean, they had a great sense of humor. They also thought I'd make a great gun mall, but I wasn't in the market for that kind of career at the time. But, you know, and then we moved. My father had the worst taste in real estate possible. If a neighborhood was about to crash and burn, that's where he bought, okay? So he moves us out of this Italian slum, and he moves us to East New York, which is in Brooklyn, right before the race riots of 1968-69. So here we are. Now I'm a teenager, and I'm watching people get mugged and assaulted right in front of my house, okay? In the middle of the night, my mother, because she didn't have any sons, she would send me and my sisters out in our nightgowns to pick up the victims off the floor down the street, bring them in the house, try to patch them up and call the cops. Okay? I mean, this was like a regular occurrence. I don't know if you remember, but John Lindsay was mayor of New York at the time, and it just happens he brings this huge trailer truck right in front of our house. When they opened the back of that trailer, that big, huge van, it seemed like 1,000 cops were coming out. It was like a clown car, Jim. They were on motorcycles. They were on horses. They were on foot. It was the craziest thing. And, I mean, we not only witnessed it, we lived through it. And then my mother...
Lindsay, yeah, he had the reputation for being a good guy.
He actually was a good mayor. That's before, you know, Ed Koch got in, whatever. Another loser. But this was the childhood that I experienced. And when I tell people I lived through history, I mean, unfortunately, we were in the middle of it, okay? I used to tell my father, why don't you buy a house in Harlem? Maybe it'll turn the property around, because he just had the worst sense of real estate in the world. And I remember after one mugging, the cops came and dragged my mother to the police station because they wanted her to ID the attacker. And they put out, my mother said, they put out like 3 or 4 teenage boys. Of course, they were black. And the cop was black himself. And he wanted my mother literally to just pick any one of them. All right? Think about that, Jim, because that's never changed, okay? The cops want to blame anybody just to close a case. And my mother looked at this cop and she says, I'm not going to pick out a kid and ruin some kid's life because you want me to pick any kid. I don't recognize these kids. And the cop got nasty with my mother. My mother slapped him down verbally because you don't mess around with a Sicilian woman. But that was the way justice worked in those days. You know, it was whoever they picked up on the street, you're the lucky guy for today. You're the one getting busted for this.
Well, you know, Americans are particularly bad with regard to history, Maria. They have no understanding of world history, but more surprisingly, virtually no understanding of American history. And
well,
you like to believe that the high schools could do a good job of this, but it seems to me, actually and generally, they fail rather badly.
Well, here's another little tidbit, charming tidbit from my youth. My father, right before I was supposed to be baptized Roman Catholic, my father becomes a Jehovah's Witness because he was impressed with the fact that those people knew the Bible. And his priest had told him, you don't read the Bible. In those days, everything was in Latin in the church. And because of that, we were not raised with any kind of racism. And when he buys this house in East New York, it was a predominantly Jewish neighborhood. The first night we move in, you'll love this story, Jim, the whole neighborhood shows up on my parents' doorstep. My father's thinking it's a welcoming committee. Well, they decide to tell him that they have a pact in the neighborhood that no one will sell to a black family. And they wanted my father to go along with this. You know, this, right? I mean, I was there, Jim. Okay, I witnessed this. And my father, I think, went into a state of shock because my father never had one drop of racism or prejudice in him. And he basically told them to get the hell off his property, okay, in no uncertain terms. You remember in those days, and I'm amazed when I talk, sometimes I interview young black people on my show from different black organizations, and they're not even aware of these stories. When I mentioned to one young woman, she was probably about 30, about blockbusting, she had no idea what I was talking about. Do you remember what blockbusting was, Jim?
Blockbusting meaning to hire to a family that was not welcome on the block by most of those who lived there. And you know, usually to make an extra buck, but it was, you know, really quite striking.
Well, the way that we understood it and lived through it, at that time, blacks in America were treated almost as badly as today. And I think they're treated worse today. That's my opinion. But the NAACP would bankroll families to move into predominantly white neighborhoods, and they called it blockbusting. And what was really funny was those same people that told my father, that wanted my father to join them in, you know, not allowing any blacks in the neighborhood, within 2 years, our entire block outside of us was black. So every last of them had a price, kind of like Netanyahu, and they wonder why they have the reputation they have. And the best part, Jim, it was so much nicer living there with the black Americans instead of the Jewish Americans. Sorry to say, there you have it. Okay. They were just so annoying and so placid and so demanding. And yet when the neighborhood turned color was when we first felt accepted. So, you know, there was a book.
In other words, you were no longer the isolated minority. You were now a part of a community that was more receptive and open-minded because they've been through a lot of what you've been through.
Well, you know, what people don't understand, if you really read history of the Italian-Americans in this country, when we came, my grandparents and people came through Ellis Island, their passports were stamped non-white. So they could only get jobs that were for non-white people. Okay. The Irish at least could become cops. They couldn't go higher than that station. But the Italians, when they came here, they had to break their backs as dock workers and laying down train tracks. Okay. Those were the only jobs available to them. And there's so many great books on that, especially the history of Italians in America or in the Black Hand. I mean, there's just so much. But I remember interviewing a guy who put out a book about Italians and he didn't know that. Okay, so now here we are in America where they want to stop teaching history. South Dakota already passed that they're not teaching history anymore because it's useless, because it already happened. Texas revising history books. Once people like you and I are dead, the truth is gone.
Yes, I worry about that, Maria, that the collective memory of events past through which we lived is going to be lost when all of us who actually had the experience and know, you know, from our own firsthand, up close and personal life, what really did go down are no longer going to be available, which is another reason why perhaps our having conversations like these are so important to those who are paying attention, who are alive above the neck and who want to know what's going on and the difference between the true, the false, the black, the white, mm-hmm. the frauds and reality. It's unbelievable.
Right. Well, but today it's all everybody else against blue privilege. I mean, we're in a total police state. You and I have been warning this was coming for 20, 30 years. And now here it is. Where, you know, cops have immunity and kill with impunity. I think the figure now, I think we're at about 908 Americans executed by cops just in 2015.
Unbelievable, Maria.
Now, when you were a kid, I mean, I don't know, because you grew up, you know, like I said, to me, you grew up with a silver spoon in your mouth compared to my background, okay?
Yeah. I grew up in an upper middle class family in Southern California, South Pasadena.
Right.
It was really a wonderful place to raise kids. It was a community with a sense of cohesion. There were a lot of active youth programs at the various churches in the community. There was a lot of community spirit. They had an excellent high school. It was virtually all white. Maria, I will say, I can't recall a single black student in my high school during the 4 years I was there.
Mm-hmm. Well,
in fact, it was three. It was a three-year junior high and then a three-year high school, but I can't recall a single black student in the whole time I was there.
Well, I think I had one black girl in elementary school in my class, and her name was Margaret. And I remember her and her face like it was yesterday because she just stood out. I mean, by the time I went to junior high school, that had changed. You know, when I was in my high school, actually 1967 when I graduated high school, my high school, which was Thomas Jefferson High School, how appropriate for me, got the city award for being the best integrated school in New York City. The year after I graduated, they had police in the halls. Okay, this is what I had to duck and cover every single day trying to stay alive going back and forth to school. So when people wonder where some of this anger and Sicilian comes out of me, You know, they haven't walked in my shoes. You know, I tell people I didn't fall out of my mother into some easy, cushy life. I mean, I've seen life from both sides.
Well, something I've always admired about you is your feisty spirit. You're not willing to give in. You're not willing to accept any crap. You won't take it. If you're being lied to, you'll call it the way it is and speak the truth.
Well, but you know,
what turns out to be a surprisingly rare commodity in the United States today.
Listen, I was cursed to have the family I had, and I was blessed to have the family I had. You know, back in those years in the late 50s, when they were forcing the polio shots on kids in school, you know, they would kick you out of school if you didn't take the polio shots. And I know you know the first batch of polio shot was laced with cancer and monkey genes from reading Dr. Mary's Monkey. Well, my father went up to school and said, "You are not injecting monkey guts into my perfect children." And, I mean, he took a stand. And we didn't get the shots, we didn't get polio, and we didn't get kicked out of school. You know, when I look back now, I say, wow, how could my father, where was he so smart? Where did he know? Well, he just intuitively knew shit that it's taken us 60 years to get uncovered, you know, any other way.
I can't believe these mandatory vaccination programs are being promoted, even in California. It's outrageous.
Well, Ben Carson he's all for mandatory vaccines because he sits on the vaccine board. You know, we're going to get to the point.
All by itself, that discredits him, in my opinion, as a serious candidate for President of the United States. Anyone who would promote mandatory vaccine programs is out, as far as I am concerned.
He also says, as far as he's concerned, he wants to undo Roe versus Wade, and that there'll be no exceptions. If a woman gets raped, that's a baby is a gift from God. Okay.
This is Carson again.
Yep.
God, Maria, how disgusting!
Right.
He wants to turn women into reproductive slaves. You'd think, given the history of slavery of blacks in this United States, they'd have some appreciation that no woman should be forced to carry to term a fetus she does not want. And what do they expect is going to happen when an unwanted child is born in the world? They add and expand the problems, the care, most turn into juvenile delinquents because they aren't welcomed with warmth and affection.
Right.
They cost the state immeasurable fortunes in law enforcement, incarceration, looking after them. I mean, it's an absurd policy, simply absurd and totally indefensible.
Well, I'm sure you saw about a month ago, Carson said that slavery wasn't bad. It was actually a good life for black people. I mean, this man is insane. And how anybody can even take him seriously as a neurosurgeon, I'm like, did this guy have a lobotomy or what? But, you know, again, if we backtrack to the way I was raised, okay, in my day, somebody like that, you just gave them a beating, okay? They just deserved a beating. And there were a lot of people that just deserved a beating. And once they got that beating, it sort of put them back on the right track, okay? It was like you beat the stupid out of them. But, you know, my parents, you know, if one of my sisters was getting accosted in school, my mother would wait outside the school, and when she watched the bully hit my sister, my mother took that girl down to the ground and kicked the shit out of her, okay? So my father saw a bully bullying my older sister, and, you know, it was snowing out in Brooklyn. You know, my father told her, just pretend you don't know that boy. I want to watch and see what he does. When he saw him bully my sister, my father beat the shit out of that kid with the whole neighborhood cheering, okay? He never did it again. This is how I was raised. Now, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just trying to explain myself to the audience. I mean, I got a teacher fired when my son was being molested along with other children in his class. I wasn't going to have a sit down with the teacher, which the principal wanted me to have. I said, the only sit down I'll have with him is with a fucking baseball bat. I said, I want this guy gone. And I was the last complaint. They fired the teacher. That's how I defended my children, the same way my parents defended their children. And I look at this young girl today who was trashed to the floor by that son of a bitch, okay? And I can tell you, if that was my kid or my mother's kid, that cop wouldn't be breathing anymore. And as far as my mother used to say it, Jim, she would say, I'll effing kill them. She says, I'll go to jail, but I'll go to jail with a smile on my face. this is how I was raised. And I watched the whole country just sit back and continue to take all the abuse, all the police state, all the squash down on all of us. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't think Americans have the fighting spirit to even take a stand and have a revolution. But I can't understand what's taken so long for people to say this is enough.
Well, we just might be testing that proposition, Maria, because what's going on today is over the pale, beyond, cross the line, unacceptable completely. And I'm just wondering if, there have been so many shootings, whether there's a covert program to try to incite a race war. I don't believe it'll fall out that way. I think it'll be the people versus the powers, the establishment, the administration, the police. And if they bring in the army is going to be divided. Half of them are going to be with the people, and half of them are going to be with the administration. It'll be a bloody mess, but we have 100 million armed Americans, Maria, that I think are going to make the difference here.
Well, you remember what Thomas Jefferson said, that in order to keep our republic, we would need a bloody revolution every 25 years.
You're long overdue, therefore.
Long overdue. But, you know, when you look at how this country's been systematically poisoned, mentally and physically, through chemtrails, through vaccines, through genetically modified food, processed food. Now the World Health Organization finally says red meat and processed meat causes cancer. All these things are attacks not just on people's immune system, but their brain, their thinking process. And it's all, but as far as I'm concerned, all by design. So I try to keep myself as healthy and in the straightest fighting spirit as I possibly could be. Because to me, even at 65 years old, if somebody attacks me, I want to be the surprise they didn't see coming. Because my mother taught us, if you're going down, make sure you take somebody else with you. Okay, we had to learn to be street fighters, even though we were girls, because survival counted on it, Jim. Every day was a day trying to survive as a kid. Survive taking the rail or taking the subway to work. That was a happening all by itself. Okay, you took your life in your hands and you were always good to be dry humped at least one way to your job. I mean, that's how I grew up. And yet that was paradise compared to how I see the future for our children. And that's why I do what I do. I just can't abide by what's going on in this country. Jimmy, you're still there? Did I lose you? Did I stun you into silence?
Your points are impeccable, Maria. I'm just absorbing it, just thinking about everything you're saying. It's simply overwhelming. I mean, the difference, the qualitative difference in the United States over this period of time is just astonishing.
You know, I thought before the show when I was a kid, and I thought it was another thing we could address, and I didn't even see that video yet. But going to elementary school when I was a kid, it was like going on vacation. You know, I resented summer vacation because there was nothing for poor kids to do living in the inner city. Okay, there was nothing to do, no place to go. I grew up void of trees, grass, any kind of nature, which is probably why I'm a nature freak now. But when we were in school, it was like a respite from the poverty that we lived in outside school. Okay. Our teacher, she was like magical. To me, she was like a movie star. And my patriotism was off the charts as a kid, learning about, you know, of course, they were all lies, but I believed them at the time, how great America was, a friend to the world. They taught us character development. They taught us about integrity, being truthful, building your character. We even had a cute little song that they taught us called Friendship. You know, and I think back on the way we were raised and how different the world was then, even if it was a myth, it was a good myth. And yet in one lifetime, you know, 50 years later, 60 years later, we're living really in like a Mad Max movie.
Yes.
You know, and people want to...
That may yet be the future ahead of us is one more reason why we cannot allow ourselves to be disarmed.
Absolutely. I mean, if only the cops have guns, we're really screwed. Okay? I mean, that's the bottom line. They've killed... I love when they talked about Saudi Arabia had, I don't know, 300 beheadings this year. So they want to demonize Saudi Arabia. At the same time, Saudi Arabia is in charge of the UN's Rights Commission. I don't know how that happened. But I said, well, but Saudi only beheaded 300 people. Our cops have executed 900 people. What's the difference if you execute them with a bullet or you take their head off? It's still an execution.
Yes.
Now, if somebody would have told you, imagine when you were a kid and somebody in your neighborhood got shot by a cop. Could you imagine the gossip and the uproar there would have been? And yet this is an everyday occurrence.
It would have been huge.
Right. But today people's just kind of, you know, and then you have the cop apologist, you know, oh, the kid should have moved or the kid should have done this. And those people, you know what? They deserve a beating too. Okay, that's the way I see it. Because until it happens to you or somebody in your family, which it will, they have no compassion whatsoever. And like I posted this morning, if this girl was white, what would your reaction be? You know, because to me as a kid, I never saw any difference. I never saw anything special about white people, okay? I grew up in a poor white neighborhood. A lot of people were, they couldn't even read or write, okay? So to me, whites...
Look at this case. The black girl who filmed this cop brutalizing her classmate is morally far superior than the white cop who was beating up the little black girl. I mean, it's disgusting. Morally, they aren't remotely on a par. He's a complete unethical cretin, and she is a virtuous person. It's disgusting.
Listen, I know that a lot of times people may think that I'm not politically correct in the words I use, but these are the words I grew up with, okay? So to me, they may have a different meaning than other people, but to me, a cop or any man that beats a woman, we were taught as kids, is a fucking pussy, okay? And somebody that deserves a beating. There was always another father or another man around that when he heard of somebody being a domestic abuser, would grab that man and beat the shit out of him in front of the whole neighborhood. And everybody kept their mouths closed. Nobody sued anybody. Nobody called a cop. It was instant justice on the spot. Okay? No, I'm not saying we need to do that today or it would even fly today. But what I'm saying is this is what I grew up with. I know what justice is, and I haven't seen any justice since 1967.
It's very sobering just listening to you recounting these experiences from your own life, Maria. Very sobering.
Oh, believe me, that's just a drop in the bucket, okay? That's just a drop in the proverbial bucket. So when men want to come out, and you are, believe me, you're my hero from the day we did that show on abortion, and you gave out real facts from a thinking, intelligent man, you became my hero, okay? Because when people go, oh, Maria, this and that, I don't really want to hear it, okay? When I got pregnant with my first child, my husband was very abusive. He did not want that child. It was a year before Roe versus Wade. He wanted me to have an abortion, okay? I did not want to have an abortion because in those days, A, it was against my religion. B, I wanted that child. And C, that meant a back alley abortion where you could be killed, okay? He even tried to beat the baby out of me, okay? So when I and I was young and so stupid and idealistic. I can't believe I'm the same person I was when I was 22. But, you know, you grew up, you know, you got to respect your husband, religion. Oh, the man is the ruler of the house. If he wants to kick the shit out of you, you're supposed to take that crap. Don't forget, I was raised with that. I believed it. It wasn't until my older sister said, Maria, you must like this abuse because when you don't, you'll do something about it. And that was when the light bulb went off in my head. Had I not left that man, I'm sure he would have killed my baby without question of a doubt. So when I see this and I've experienced things myself and I hear men wanting to make decisions, any decision for a woman, I go right 100 degrees crazy. I can't help it. It's because of who I am and what I've experienced. My second child, his father was thrilled to death, wanted that baby. So there was no problem. Okay. But if, you know, a husband said, I don't want this kid, and we actually discussed it, I had no problem having an abortion. It was legal, it was safe, and I had my children, and my husband didn't want any more. Great. That works for me. But when I look at how now they want to suppress everybody, back to those pre-Roe versus Wade, back alley abortions, I saw so many women taking pills. Jim, I don't even know what those pills were, to self-abort. So many of them get sick. And they were tiny little purple pills. I couldn't even tell you what they were. And it was 50 cents a pill. We're looking at maybe 1968. How many of my friends I saw go to the hospital after a bad abortion, hemorrhaging to death? The abortions botched them up so bad they couldn't have children in the future. I mean, I lived through all of that. You know, I had to pay for some of my friends' abortions because if their parents would have known, they would have been killed. Okay, literally killed. So when I look at how far we've come and see how far they want to push us back, I could blame it on the Sicilian in me, or my, I like to call it righteous indignation. I can't keep my mouth shut. I mean, those topics drive me insane. So how's that for a little bit of news on your co-host, sweet little Maria?
Well, it's fascinating. Friday, I gave a presentation at the Association for Politics and the Life Sciences, which just happened to meet here in Madison, about the politics of abortion and Planned Parenthood, where I began by discussing Carly Fiorina's ridiculous claims and posturing and her use of, misleading a example, claiming that an aborted fetus had been taken by Planned Parenthood, kept alive so they could harvest its brain and dissect its parts, which he said on national television during a presidential debate, where it turned out that the fetus was a 19-week miscarriage.
Right.
It wasn't even the result of an abortion. It had nothing to do with Planned Parenthood. There was no harvesting of the brain. There was no dissection. The woman whose child it was recognized the photograph but hasn't spoken out because she supports the pro-life position. I went through and explained how the pro-life position is undemocratic, un-American, and in fact completely immoral, because as I was observing, it will convert women into reproductive slaves, having to bear children even if they prefer not to do so. Slavery is immoral if any action is immoral. And yet individuals like Carly Fiorina or Ben Carson, it turns out, would want to impose that on the American people. It's completely outrageous, Maria, but I'm telling you, I've continued to fight the good fight. I published letters in the Wisconsin State Journal about this, making just the kinds of points I enumerated here. In fact, I included paragraphs from my letters to the editor here in Wisconsin to substantiate the points I've just been making.
Right. Well, you know, Rubio is on the same line with them when it comes to abortion and rape as well. I mean, these are people who want to put in their version of a theocracy. And, you know, I'm sure you've been following the stories. So far, I think it's over 400 women in America who are in jail for having a miscarriage, basically because they had a miscarriage, and they're in jail for harming the fetus. You know, and don't forget this little twerp, is it Paul Ryan, the new Speaker of the House? He's the one that started the whole fetal personhood bill, and he's going to be Speaker of the House. All right.
Well, of course, that's the crucial distinction right there, is between, you know, life and personhood, where people like Mike Huckabee have tried to promote the idea that we should have declare a conception, you know, as a person from the time that the sperm fertilizes the ovum. Can you imagine the absurd consequences that would follow, Maria, from adopting that practice? To preserve and uphold the legal rights of persons, we'd have to have menstrual police. Women would have to have monthly pregnancy tests. We'd even have to track the distribution of semen to make sure it wasn't winding up in the wrong places. I mean, the situation, the imposition of government would be simply completely absurd.
I
thought that was the party that wanted to get government out of our lives. Yeah, they want to intrude into the most personal and intimate aspects of our own bedrooms. It's outrageous. It's stupid. It's obscene.
I know. And I look back at my own life. You know, I had trouble, you know, conceiving. You know, the doctors had told me I would not be able to have children. So before I got pregnant with my daughter, I had had two miscarriages. I went through the emotional angst of those miscarriages because I wanted a child. I would have been arrested today for the same thing. So on top of your misery over losing your child, you're going to find yourself in jail, especially in the South. I mean, how crazy is that?
Yeah.
Jim, let's take a short break, a little breathing break. Jim and I will be right back.
Wow. One solid hour of commercial-free information thanks to you. The person who wants truth has the integrity and understanding to support it with your donation and subscription. Maria believes people can handle the truth and delivers it tirelessly with those with ears to listen. 14 years on the net. Won't you take a moment right now to commit to a subscription of your choice at www.maria.net. That's MERIA.net. Over 1,100 hours of pure education all in one place, 24/7, and all downloadable. Knowledge is power. Sharing that knowledge is wisdom. Together we can change the world and create real hope. Now let's get back to the Maria Heller Show.
Welcome back to Born in the 1940s, We Remember, with myself and my co-host Jim Fetzer. We are real, breathing, thinking Americans that have lived in America all these years on no specific agenda except coming from two different backgrounds, coming to agreement on what we knew was the myth of America, or happy days, and where we see the country today and where it's headed. And I think, and I know you agree with me, Jim, two pivotal points, the murder of John Kennedy and 9/11, the beginning and the end of this country. Should I say the beginning of the end?
Roughly, you mean the beginning of the end was JFK, and 9/11 represented the real end because it was utter lawlessness with the government attacking the American people just as the government had taken out its own publicly elected leader. I mean, it's unreal what we've gone through here.
Right. I mean, I don't know if you remember because you were still a little kid. I mean, I know I came in afterwards. The false flag that was Pearl Harbor to get us involved in World War II. But I do remember the lies of the Gulf of Tonkin bullshit that got us involved in Vietnam.
I was one year old on December 7th, 1 year and a day old on December 7th, 1941, a day that will live in infamy.
Infamy. They all added infamy. It was an old joke. But when I look at Vietnam, you know, at that point, I have to tell you, I was in a much different space than now because I was young. I was maybe 20 years old, 18, 20 years old. And I have to tell you, not a one of my male friends was in any danger because they were all criminals and had criminal records. So none of them were going into the army or the service. But my cousins were. You know, they were who was in the Marines, who was, you know, going in the Army, this and that. But I always knew that they were just throwing their lives away intuitively, that it was all bullshit. It may have taken all those years later to learn that I was right, but intuitively I knew that we had no business being there, and I was glad that my gangster friends couldn't get drafted. And not a one of them, and by the way, wanted to fight that war either. Okay, they were too busy fighting the war on the streets. So I kind of skipped over that part, but I know you didn't.
Well, it's all, I was commissioned in June of 1962, and my first tour of duty was in the Far East. We were base camped in Okinawa. I joined my unit, which was Mortar Battery, 1st Battalion, 12th Marines, 3rd Marine Division, during a training op at the base of Mount Fuji. And as I may have observed during our previous conversation, while we were firing mortar rounds at the base of the mountain. There were pilgrims in the distance making their trek because it's a sacred mountain in their religion. And I turned to my fellow officer and said, who thinks we're ugly Americans?
All right. Well, all you got to do is travel anywhere to know. You can just look at some ugly Americans. They can be pretty ugly. But, you know, one of my good friends served in World War II. He lied about his age. He was only 17, but he believed, like we all want to believe, in the myth of America. And now he's like 93, 94 years old. And all I've heard out of him the past 20 years is how angry he is that all his friends had to die for a war based on lies. And to see the mess this country is now, he's livid at 93. And still getting flashbacks, by the way, of the war.
Yeah, of course, your point about the Gulf of Tonkin was impeccable. Lyndon would later say, for all he knew, they were firing at whales out there. It was completely contrived, no justification. Our best military experts, including General MacArthur, had advised against getting involved in a land war in Asia. And, of course, here they were all hell-bent on doing it. It was a principal reason for taking out JFK. The Joint Chiefs were upset because he'd not invaded Cuba contrary to the unanimous recommendation. He'd signed an above-ground test ban treaty with the Soviet Union contrary to their unanimous opposition. Now he was pulling our forces out of Vietnam, where they believed that a stand had to be taken against the expansion of international godless communism. We slaughtered over 2 million Vietnamese during that war, Maria, and lost over 50,000 fine young men in a war that should never have been fought.
Absolutely.
And we manifestly lost, and we've never recovered from the Vietnam syndrome, the idea that America could lose a war. And now we've become engaged in the Middle East. We've turned it into chaos and rubble for no good reason other than to defer and serve our masters, the Israeli government, which organized 9/11 in collaboration with our own CIA and the neocons of the Department of Defense, who were, for the most part, dual U.S.-Israeli citizens in order to get the United States engaged in wars against the modern Arab states that had served as a counterbalance, Israel's domination of the Middle East. And we were very obliging about it, and we have turned the Middle East into litter as a consequence.
Absolutely. And I saw your latest article on 9/11 on, I think it was Press TV yesterday. I read it on the air in my news show. It was excellent. But I'm also backing in and reading Dave McGowan's book, Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon, about Laurel Canyon. And if I don't think that I'm mistaken, Jim Morrison of the Doors, it was his father who created the whole Gulf of Tonkin lie to get that war on. So when you look at even the closeness of the supposed hippie music industry, as Dave clearly shows in his book, how many of those kids from the 60s that we made superstars were all children of high-positioned military people and intel people in this country. It makes you realize that even all of that was fake and smokescreen. So we grew up in a time of lies, but we didn't know the lies were out there. And now I think Dave is paying the ultimate price of a patriot with his life and knows on his way out, he said it as late as yesterday, he knows that he was hit with a bioweapon. Imagine dying knowing that as you're going through this slow, painful death, that you're actually living your murder out.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it? I have no doubt that's true.
Well, no one doubts it.
They're taking out a lot of their critics, Maria.
Well, you know, that's why you and I better scrape up as many shows as we can. Because,
that's right.
But I'll tell you what, I will remember in those last moments my mother's words. If you're going out, make sure you take somebody with you. And that's right.
That's why we're doing as much as we can as long as we can do it.
Right, and I know to a lot of people, and that I think is, we won't be having to go into our backgrounds as much on our future shows because we are going to work on different topics all the time. I want my audience to know that. What it was like when Jim and I were kids, whether it's about elections, whether it's about the education, whether it's about heroes. We have no heroes today. We have no legends. We have zip. But to understand who both of us are, and I think it's important because so many people are not choosy about who they listen to, and then they automatically parrot those people or automatically judge them based on I don't know what, okay? But I've often told people, don't ever mistake me for a sweet, kind little old lady because you got the wrong person, okay? My body may reflect that, but the person inside me doesn't and never will. So it's important for you and I to be, and I know you get demonized as much as I do from idiots, and you handle it as a gentleman most of the time. For me, I want to just drop kick them in the face and kick them until they're dead, because that's just the way I am. But I try to keep that part of me under control. But it's important for people to know, and I mean more so, even when I promoted this on social media this morning, I said, this is for children of baby boomers, okay? I know a lot of my audience are baby boomers, and they're probably relating to a lot of what we say. But what we have to say is for the future generations, and they need to pay attention, or they're going to be living in a hell that they can't even imagine.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, you know, just stay tuned. And you know what? Jim's got a fabulous body of work. Jim, I know you have a new book out. I know I kept my notes somewhere about Sandy Hook. Nobody died at Sandy Hook. I think that Dave McGowan's work on the Boston bombings was what cost him his life. And I know it cost you, too, because you got kicked off that website for your work on the Boston bombings. But Sandy Hook, it looks like you're not about to give that up at all.
No. We have a new book out now. There are 9 contributors, 6 PhDs. One also has a JD. And we have done a devastating job of blowing apart the Sandy Hook hoax, where everyone can find it. Nobody Died at Sandy Hook is the name of the book. It's available at Amazon.com and CreateSpace. And it's getting a lot of play. The DC Clothesline, for example, has recently published a piece about it. And that's a wonderful website, which is devoted to hanging out the government's dirty laundry. I think that this is so outrageous, Maria, because it involved the complicity of everyone from the teachers to the firemen to the local police to the Connecticut State Police to the governor and lieutenant governor of the state, all the way up to the Attorney General Eric Holder and the President of the United States, Barack Obama. There's no doubt about it. We have proof that the classic photograph of the evacuation being led by a policewoman was staged. There's a second photograph showing a group of parents there looking on, and that they rearranged the children in the line. More than that, we have 50 photographs showing them furnishing the Lanza home to serve as a prop. One of them even shows her bed, in which she allegedly was killed, still has a moving pad under the poster. Huh. Under one of the legs of the bed. We have 50 photographs from the refurbishing the school. We have photographs of the moving vans coming in. We have photographs of them bringing stuff into the building. We have the moving tag still over the announcement of the classroom. It's still got the moving tag on it. We have photographs from outside. You can see the SWAT team is already there. It's early in the morning. Nothing has happened yet, but they have police tape already up. You can see the unbroken windows from classroom 10, 4 in a row. You can see even Wayne Carver, the medical examiner, staying there waiting for his portable mortuary tent to show up. Maria, we have close-ups of the perps at the window of the classroom drilling holes that we're going to claim to be from bullets coming out. You can see them drilling them. We have photographs of perps inside the building when there's no blown-out glass. That is the manner in which Adam Lanza is alleged to have entered. You're not going to believe the extent, the detail, the thoroughness with which we have deconstructed the official account.
Right. Well, you know, I have reviewed it, and it looks excellent, Jim. So thank you so much for not giving up. So for people that say my generation sold out, we didn't all sell out, okay? So I'm not taking that. I'm not taking the blame for the losers that either sold out or bought in. That's not me. That's not Jim. That's not any of my co-hosts. Jim, thank you so much for joining me today. I guess our next show will be Roaring Truth, in case we weren't roaring enough today.
Actually, wonderful, Maria. It's such a pleasure to be here and to recount your history. I found that utterly fascinating. I'm blown away.
Hey, I survived that. People say, aren't you afraid? They have no idea. I had to lose fear at the age of like 10. So no, it's not too much that actually scares me out there. Thanks so much, Jim. We'll talk soon.
You got it.
Bye. Check out Jim's work at jimsfetzer.blogspot.com. Get the books. We're not going to be here forever. Share the information. Support us while we're alive and still able to do these shows for you. Send some good energy to my good friend Dave, and I'll see you guys Thursday with news of Planet of the Apes. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.